You're listening to the Become Stronger podcast. In this episode, me and my guest Israel are talking about your secret superpower, and that's your emotions. Even though emotions are very powerful, most people, especially men, never really tap into their full potential because there's such a big resistance, because you might not want to look weak, or you think that facing your emotions or dealing with them makes you less of a man. In this episode, we are talking about why this is complete bullshit and how you can master your emotions so that you have a more fulfilling and more successful life. Keep listening. All right, welcome to another episode of the Become Stronger podcast. My name is Manuel, and this is your podcast for high performance and fitness. And today we are going to talk about one of the most underrated topics out there in the fitness space, in the whole self-improvement space, and it's about emotions. It's also a topic a lot of people, especially men, try to avoid. And if you're listening to this, you might can relate to this somehow. And today we are going to talk about why you should stop avoiding it, because it might not be the best thing to do. And for this topic, I brought a guest today, and yeah, hey Israel.
Hi Manuel, thank you for having me.
Perfect. So as always with guest episodes, we start by a quick introduction. So tell us a little bit about yourself and why this is an episode you like to talk about, or a topic you like to talk about.
Sure. So yeah, my name's Israel Smith. I'm based on the East Coast of Australia, and I am very happily married with two amazing kids. I have a daughter who's 17 next month and a son who's 12 and a half. And so that's sort of a very entertaining and fun time with, you know, one teenager and one soon to be teenager. And I work as a well-being and emotional resilience coach for men. And the main reason I do that, the way I got into this, is because when my son was first born, I actually ended up in a really, really deep depression, as like a, you know, postpartum depression, postnatal depression thing, which is, a lot of people get a bit confused when I say that because I'm a man and they're like, but you didn't have the child. How does that work? And as it turns out, it's very common. It's something that affects about 1 in 10 dads on average in Australia. And that's probably a little low because men, as you just said, don't talk about their emotions or their feelings very much. So I had a very, very deep personal experience of having to make peace with or deal with and process the sorts of emotions I was feeling around that time when my son was born. And as I got through that, I started realizing that this conversation was needed. It needed to be had. It needed to be promoted and spread more broadly. And after a lot of different paths that my working and personal life has taken over the sort of, well, 12 and a half years since he was born, a couple of years ago, I just got the nudge that I really needed to be doing this as a coach. I needed to be supporting men and helping them make peace with their own emotional selves and live more fulfilled, more satisfied, more complete and whole kind of lives. So that's me.
Oh, thank you for the introduction. It's a really great story. And I think it's a topic most of you who are listening can relate to some degree by going through doubts of depression or having a difficult time emotionally. And when you say that you had to make peace with your emotions, what was your approach to doing that? Or yeah, has there been any, what has been your challenge? Because you also agreed that most men tend to avoid this. So it's probably safe to say that it's a very challenging topic for men in general. It's been a very challenging topic for me personally over the last, 10 years. And so what has been your approach to get through that difficult time?
So the when I use the phrase making peace with my emotions, I think what I really had to do was accept that I have emotions for starters, which I think is a big piece that men typically avoid. They sort of like, oh no, I don't feel things. I'm invulnerable. I'm made of rock, or you know, like whatever it is. We have this kind of broken belief as men, or like we get conditioned by society and by our, you know, upbringing, what have you, that we don't have feelings, or that we shouldn't have feelings. And, you know, and that's often correlated with a sense of weakness, that to be an emotional person is to be weak, or to be inferior, or to be less than. And, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say that in the fitness industry, there's a lot of alpha male, there's a lot of posturing, there's a lot of, you know, I'm the big strong man, that kind of, that is the ideal that people aspire to, you know, the bulging pecs and biceps and the rippling six-pack abs and all of that. And holding that, and holding the reality that we are also emotional beings that can feel sad and can feel guilty and can feel anguish or despair, or can feel, you know, all of these different difficult emotions, as well as the typical ones of like you feel angry or we feel joyful or what have you, like that whole spectrum of emotions, it's kind of like a language that we never get taught. It really is like an essential human language, I think, that just is we're almost illiterate in that language of our emotions unless we focus and prioritize it. And in my own work, I draw really heavily as a concept on a model kind of published by an Australian guy called Steve Bidulph. And he talks about this thing called the four-story mansion. So imagine a building with four floors. And he says that we need to imagine that as humans, we have four floors, four layers, or four stories to our wholeness, to our being a fully expressed, fully kind of holistic human. And so the first floor is our physical self. And that's what we typically address when we're doing things like health and fitness and exercise. But it's also about how we fuel our body, how we rest our body, anything to do with our physical self. Our second floor is our emotions. And they are the feelings that we have about circumstances in our life, or about things that happen to us, or things that we believe, or anything like that. The third floor is our thoughts, everything that goes on in our mind about, you know, the stories we're telling ourselves, or the narrative that we're putting out about our life, or the things we say to ourselves, or the thoughts we're thinking about our work or our relationships or our family. And then the fourth floor is our spirituality. It's the sense of connection to something bigger than us. And Steve's work that I've kind of really embraced, and that I use as a really powerful model with my clients, is to reflect on that we need to have like a lift, like an elevator that moves freely between all four floors in that mansion, that we can then be fluent with our physical, our emotional, our mental, and our spiritual selves all the way through. And often as men, we are really, really good at the mental layer. We are most of the time, we're pretty good with the physical layer, and that's about it. We don't often, unless we have a very strong faith background, we don't typically delve into spirituality very much, and we very rarely dip into our emotions. But the challenge there is that because we are human and these parts are inextricable from the human experience, to ignore them means to ignore an enormous part of ourselves. And that approach works until it doesn't.
Yeah.
and often it's when we reach a point in our life where everything we've been doing so far starts to stop working. It begins to break down, or we start to have those long dark night of the soul, or those moments where we realize we're completely out of alignment with our values, or we don't even know what our values are, or we're having trouble with a serious relationship, or, you know, any of these things show up where we're like, hang on, something's not right here. Usually that's the point at which people go, damn, I'm going to have to face this whole thing that I am actually an emotional human. I do have emotions that need to be felt.
Yeah. And
When you say Dark Night of the Soul, most people would call it midlife crisis.
Exactly.
Just use the more popular
term. Look, I was an overachiever, so I had my midlife crisis when I was in my 20s and early 30s. You know, I didn't wait until I was in my 40s or 50s for that. So I hit that really early. But yeah, you're exactly right, a midlife crisis, because that's the thing where we start going, hang on, I should be somewhere different, or hang on, this doesn't quite work the way it's supposed to. The story that society told me of, you know, get a great job and earn lots of money and get married and have children and have the house and the two cars and all the stuff. Sometimes that works for people and sometimes that's really perfect. But a lot of the time when we reach midlife, we start to reflect on the fact that we might well be halfway done with our time on the planet. And we think, well, hang on a minute, is this really how I want to be living? And all those little nagging things that we've been very, very good at stuffing down, those emotions that we've been avoiding, they start to show up.
Yeah. And it's really interesting that you point on the thing you mentioned about the fitness industry, the big muscle, the big weights, all of that, the kind of alpha male thing. And
yeah,
what most people don't know is that a lot of those fitness influencers, a lot of those struggle hard with emotional insecurities. A lot of them struggle with their body image, despite looking ripped and shredded. I used to be there. When I started to lift weights, it was basically out of emotional insecurity, because I felt I had absolutely no confidence back then. And I thought that I could, let me just build my body. Like, that was my reaction to this kind of insecure. And honestly, I think it's a pretty decent reaction to something like that, because it's productive, right? It's better than drinking or doing things like that. So I think lifting weights is a pretty good way to cope with it. But the thing is, like, as you said, at some point you'll have to face it. And I think I consider myself pretty lucky that I made this experience in my early 20s. I didn't have to wait till I was 40 or 50 to really face this, as many people do. And I think it's a great thing, because it's probably easier to go through it early in life. And it was basically hit me in 2020. That's when it really, really hit me, because I was at the peak of my strength. I was finally hitting that triple body weight deadlift, and I was getting traction in my business, and I still felt weak as shit. I was like, okay, what's going on here? And I really love the model you mentioned with the four floors. And for me, basically, I'm a very analytical person still, and it's basically been part of who I am, in how I went through high school, through university, always been into science, and I learned, okay, I've really been avoiding this part of me. And the thing is, as you said, it's not going to go away, right? At some point you can either deal with it, or you'll just carry it through with you until at some point it hits you.
Look, the thing that's really that can be dangerous, I suppose, about not dealing with our emotions is that often things that we don't process, or that we don't allow ourselves to really feel and really sit with, those emotions can begin to show up as physical illness. Things that we ignore about what's going on in our soul or in our emotional self, that can, like, anger is a good one, right? If we don't process our anger, or figure out what is it trying to tell us, or learn how to handle it in a healthy way. I mean, I'm first person to tell you, there is nothing wrong with anger. Anger is a really useful emotion, and we shouldn't really let it harm other people. Right. That's where I sort of draw the line. If you can feel your anger, process it, and, like, you know, go for a run around the block, put the gloves on and punch a bag, whatever it is, you know, something physical to really move that feeling of anger, but also reflect on, what is it trying to tell me? But when we ignore our anger, that can start to show up as like inflammation in our body. That can turn into illnesses. It can turn into, you know, disease over time if it's really not looked at. And there are plenty of examples that you and I have seen through the sort of the TCP community we've been part of people who have had illness or disease that has been associated with a specific trauma or a specific emotional experience that they hadn't fully processed. And once they start to process that or release the beliefs around that, the illness goes away or heals slowly sometimes, but eventually it recovers, you know. I'm not saying it's the be-all end-all, but it's one of those risky things that if we ignore part of ourselves, it starts to, I guess, morph into something that becomes a physical manifestation.
Yeah, and I think part of that is simply because if you don't manage with emotions, it will lead to stress, right? And stress, yeah. there's so much research that shows how stress contributes to basically everything you don't want. Cardiovascular disease, yep. Cancer, basically everything you can imagine gets worse through stress. And one of the main pillars of stress management is being able to manage your emotions, because as you know by now, they won't just go away. You know, like you can stuff it down.
That's right. And
that's what most of us, especially men, are probably taught. And I think it's really an important conversation to have about, because I mean, you've already tapped into the word a little bit. Vulnerability, being emotional. A lot of men who are listening to this, a lot of men who have strength as a high value, probably when they hear this for the first time, they probably hear like, what the fuck, I don't want this. And I can tell, because it used to be me too. When I learned about those topics in the first place, I was like, what do you mean being vulnerable? And that's not me. And
yeah,
I think there's a big conception on what it means to really I think there's a misconception when we talk about, okay, managing your emotions and being super emotional, right? I don't think that it's really about like being about like showing your emotions like in an unhealthy way, but it's really about dealing it. So since this is your coaching topic, what does vulnerability really mean in your eyes?
Yeah, so I to me, being vulnerable is about being willing to show a part of ourselves that we normally keep hidden. It's about being willing to open ourselves up. And the catch there is that that can be, and actually that is scary. When we open ourselves up, we run the risk of being hurt. We run the risk of being in uncertainty, you know. The definition that I love going back to is the one that Brené Brown uses, and I'm not sure whether you're listening. Most people around the world have heard who Brené Brown is, but she's a researcher about shame and vulnerability. This is literally what she does for her career. And her definition, which is heavily based on research studies that she and her other colleagues have conducted, she defines vulnerability as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. So when you frame it in those terms, as a man who, as you said, has strength as a high value and who is relied upon to be a protector and a provider, both perhaps in a family construct or in a relationship, as well as in society, and with all of the kind of conditioning and programming we get through our societal upbringing, when we are told that we need to be strong and we need to be a protector and we need to be a provider, opening ourselves up emotionally is the complete opposite in a warrior viewpoint of being strong and being a protector, right? Like if you're a soldier and you're carrying a sword and a shield, vulnerability is about putting your sword and your shield down and being everything that you are, and then inviting that softness or that openness. And to put down the weapons and the shields means that we're then exposed to attack, we're then exposed to risk, and we don't know how it's going to go. So the thing that's really fascinating in my personal experience, though, is that the truth of it, the reality of it, is completely different in every situation where I've been deeply vulnerable with another human, sharing story. I've been on national television in Australia several times talking about my experience of postnatal depression. I've run workshops and I've, you know, told people all sorts of, I don't want to say deep, dark secrets, but things that people wouldn't typically talk about me as a man, and about the things that I've discovered about myself that I want to put out into discourse for people to learn from. Every time I've done that, that vulnerability that I demonstrated has brought me closer to people. It has made me more connected to other people. And I've come to view it as a source of strength. And when we really think about it, even in pure logical terms, as the soldier who puts down his sword and his shield, to be able to rely on himself alone, no matter what comes at him once his weapons and shields are sort of put away, to be able to stand and face the circumstances of his life, that's really courageous. That's really strong. That comes from a place of deep-rooted power and belief in oneself and one's ability. So when we view it through the alpha male archetype, you know, it's almost funny. It's like I'm seeing in my head, you know, those stupid action films where there's two strong men as the protagonist and the antagonist, and like they're kind of fighting each other. And then right at the end of the film, it's like a showdown and they take off their armor and they put the weapons down. They just go bare knuckles at each other and they see who's stronger without any of the extra stuff, without any of the armoring. And the way we read that in the film is that's really strong, that's really courageous, that's really brave. And I look at vulnerability as exactly that. It's taking the armor off, it's letting people see us for who we truly are, and it's being okay with that no matter what happens next.
Yeah, I really love that. And I think it's when you say about the archetype of being the strong man, of being the protector, I don't see, because I think the problem is that most struggle with is that they see this as two exclusive things. You know, you can like be vulnerable, yes, or you can be like this strong protector, but I don't think that they are exclusive at all. I think it's a sign of strength, as you said, because when we come back to this model, that it's basically one part of you. It requires a ton of strength to really also face this part of yours, because if you don't do that, you're basically just hiding. And I personally don't see hiding necessarily as a sign of strength. And it's
hiding from ourselves, right? Like that's the really fascinating thing, that when we have these emotions or where we have stuff that we need to deal with internally, on a self-development side or on a, you know, anything that's internal to us, things that we've experienced, things that we've done, actions we've taken that we're not proud of, things we need to reflect upon, stuff that hurts us, it's very easy to choose comfort. It's very easy to avoid the pain or the discomfort of facing those things and looking at ourselves in the mirror and seeing ourselves truly with all of our flaws, all of our bad behaviors, our bad patterns, or our patterns that don't serve us. But it is truly brave to do that too. And yeah, it's funny because you're right. We do kind of run a mile in the other direction sometimes. It's like, oh God, I can't do that. That's too hard. You know, that's too uncomfortable. But we become better people because of it. I mean, yeah, when I think about the men that I've worked with and that I've supported, they've been on that edge where they're like, okay, I know that there's some stuff here I need to go through. I know that this is going to be uncomfortable. and I don't know how to do it. Like I said earlier, it's like a language they have no vocabulary in. They've got no literacy. They're like, I don't know how to do it, but I can tell that it's actually part of me that I need to work on. So let's start. How do we do this? What does it look like? You know, and that takes a lot of growth even to get to that point, you know, to sort of go, oh, all right, I've got to do this. And you've been there, you've done that, right? Where you've gone, all right, this ain't working. What's next? I've got to go to that dark corner of myself that I've been unwilling to tread foot in, you know?
Yeah. And I think for me personally, the reason why this was difficult for me is because when I was a kid, I was crying. I was really crying a lot. And I used to be very emotional, and I just learned that, okay, if I like this kind of behavior is just unwanted. So, growing up, I learned, okay, this is really something that it's like a side of me that I cannot show. And that's why I developed this coping behavior. So for me, in lifting weights at first, when I started, it was a source of coping behavior. And at some point, okay, I just realized, okay, this doesn't really work the way I intended to. And being this achievement personality or putting myself into that doesn't really work either, because on the flip side, I was doing a lot of destructive stuff. You know, like I was drinking, I was playing video games in a very unhealthy way throughout my late teens. And that's where this, it's kind of like the shadow side. And if you talk about this warrior archetype, right, there's this book, I don't know the name of the author right now, but it's called Warrior, Magician, Lover, King. And it's basically those four male archetypes that are present in every mythology. So since ancient times, and in this concept, basically is every of those archetypes has a powerful side, but also a bipolar shadow side. And if you look at the warrior, one of the shadow sides, the shadow archetypes are the sadist and the masochist. So when you so you see this all the time, you know, you see this when you're like out of balance, and you see this with entrepreneurs who work 18 hours a day and they're like all straightforward. But then they, at home, they are a tyrant at home, or they get abusive towards their family, or they get into really unhealthy coping mechanisms like drinking, doing drugs, things like that. Yeah. You see this with fitness influencers that they like show this persona. Okay, I'm like this, basically this perfect individual. And on the flip side, they deal with depression, they deal with a poor body image, and there's a lot of that people don't see when they see those personalities. I used to deal with that to some degrees. Like I was shredded and strong, and I still had a very poor body image, and that's how those kind of things show up. And in this book, he also talks about how you need to bring balance into those between those archetypes, so that you can really be a powerful man. And one major part of that is being able to handle your emotions resourcefully. And I think what happens, especially like, you know this as an entrepreneur, you know this, like if you're not emotionally secure, you don't get anywhere, because as soon as you launch Facebook ads, you will get troll comments, people will trigger you, and when you're not emotionally secure, this stuff is gonna throw you off, and like it used to. So you need to get to the level of development. And that's like the next thing we have to talk about. So how do you get to this level of development?
No, like you're absolutely right. I mean, managing our emotions. I've often said to people that if you want a a shortcut to bring up all of the stuff that you haven't dealt with in your life. Start a small business, become an entrepreneur, and then there's nowhere to hide and it'll all come up, right? All of the beliefs, all the self-sabotaging patterns, all of the stuff that, you know, it all starts showing up. You're absolutely, you know, your self-image becomes attached to the success of the business. And then once that starts happening, then anything that threatens that threatens the identity of the self. And then it's just a whole disaster. So I think the way, so I sort of frame this in a sense of, again, using those sort of the four-story mansion idea, recognizing that to be human means we have emotions. We can't opt out of that part of the human experience. You know, that's unavoidable. And so the acceptance piece is the first place to start. Let's go, okay, I accept I have emotions. Whoa, shocker. But yes, I accept that as a man, even though I, you know, might be able to bench press three times my body weight or deadlift, whatever it was that you're talking about, I'm like, far out, that's extraordinary. Even though those may be some of your attributes, you know, I have emotions. I cannot avoid this. This is a part of me. And then it just becomes a gentle process of building fluency, building literacy with that. And so there are some great tools to help with that. And so things like just a simple meditation or a simple, even just closing your eyes and breathing and thinking, what am I feeling right now? What is it that's, what do I feel? Where is it showing up? What has brought this feeling about? And then start to build an ability to name more and more nuanced emotions. So there's kind of, like, you know how color works, where there's some primary colors and then every other color is sort of a mixture in some form of those primaries. There's a lot of experts who believe emotions operate the same way, that there are some, it varies between say 4 or 6 primary emotions. So things like happiness, sadness, or, you know, happiness is like joy, sadness or sorrow, anger, fear. It's like that film Inside Out, the Pixar movie. Like, it's an animated film where you sort of go inside the person and all the emotions have their own character. And so anger is this little short man who's bright red, and when he really goes off, his whole head explodes with lava. It's hilarious. But there's, and then I think there's disgust in there as well, and there may be one other one. I think maybe it's peace in one of the most recent things I've read and looked at. So anyway, so all of those emotions, if you mix and match different parts of them, you come up with the secondary or the tertiary sort of emotions, the more nuanced pieces. And another great resource there is actually leaning back on the expert Brené Brown. She's written a fantastic book called Atlas of the Heart. And it's almost like an emotional dictionary. It's literally like a series of definitions of what are these emotional experiences or these emotions that we feel. And she went into all of the research and all of the literature. So this is almost it's kind of a gift that I give almost every single one of my clients to have this book on hand and to start to understand what causes specific emotions and what is it related to. And then we work together. So building that acceptance and then that literacy of like, okay, what is it? And even things like, where is it showing up in my body? Like, is it in my heart? Is it in really deep in my belly? Is it in like my legs maybe? You know, for example, anger is a really common one. We all can appreciate or recognize that we've felt angry at some point. In my experience, when I get angry, I feel like my whole body is really hot. And I feel a real tightness, particularly in, for some reason, in the top of my head. And then in my muscles, everything, my chest and my top of my head feel really tight. And the way that I need to process that so it's healthy and not harmful to others is usually to move my body. So to do something like go for a surf where I'm moving my muscles, or, you know, having to breathe faster and get my heart rate elevated. Because the beautiful thing about anger is that it's emotional, but it also has a very physical element, because when we get angry, pretty much always it will come from that fight or flight response of our brain, right? So instantly when we get triggered into a fight or flight thing, our body just dumps heaps of adrenaline into our bloodstream, gets us ready for the battle or the runaway, you know, so our body is primed and ready to take action. So recognizing that, you know, we need to move our bodies. We need to move that emotion through. And, you know, you've probably heard this as well from some of the coaches in the community, but emotion, energy in motion. Yeah. So, you know, let the energy of the emotion start to move and start to flow through. So, you know, managing emotions resourcefully is kind of a couple of steps. It's accept that you have them. Start to get curious about where in our body they're showing up, what they're making us feel, what are the sensations associated with us. Get curious about what circumstances might have sparked those emotions, whether it's something somebody said, whether it's a judgment that you feel or feel like you've been judged, whether it's, you know, something else that might have gone on. And building our literacy so we can get clearer and clearer about the specifics and the nuances, and then work out a process for us. And it is different for every person. You know, not everyone goes surfing, not everyone has the ability. So that's a great processing tool for me, but that doesn't necessarily work for people who are in landlocked environments or who just hate the ocean, right? So it might be lift weights at the gym. It might be sit down with a pen and paper and just write until you feel empty. It might be listen to some music and dance or move or shake or something to try and move things through your body. Like there are a range of different ways. Often with processing our emotions, they are very physical. Like when we feel grief or sadness, despair, we often cry. We often have that very physical release of tears and sobs and emotions. So it varies, but you know, I think it's along those lines. And then one of my favorite sayings to my clients, 3 sets, 12 reps, right? Like this is about practice over time. This is about repetition.
Yeah.
We don't, as much as I wish this was the case where we could go to the gym once and then have a perfectly fit, sculpted body for the rest of our lives, doesn't happen that way. And like everything in our lives, catching waves on a surfboard takes hours and like years of practice and repetition. Lifting weights safely and building up to large volumes or large, you know, heavy weights requires repetition over time, where you truly pay attention to good form and where you really look after the structure and the foundation and all of that. Like resourceful handling of our emotions is the same thing. And you know, one of the things I do as a coach is help guide people through that process so they can feel supported in that journey rather than just left adrift in some sort of big scary new world. And we start small and we gradually build, so we feel more and more confident the more we go.
Yeah, I love this. And I think what you mentioned about the acceptance part, that I think this is really the most difficult part for a lot of people, that you just come to the that you start to see, okay, I have those kind of things. And it's like something I had to learn for myself, because I'm so analytical, is to really learn to differentiate between a thought and an emotion. And I think that this can be a big challenge for a lot of people. And because to some degree they are correlated, like certain thoughts lead to emotions, emotions are accompanied by thoughts. So I love what you said about building this literacy. And I think it's also really important to learn to differentiate, because when I'm something like, I don't feel like working out today, like that's not an emotion. Like that's a story you're telling yourself. And so that's really something I think is crucial, that you develop this literacy, and also to stop fighting against. Because if you if you're angry and you try to fight your anger, you just create more of it. And I think that this is one of the struggles that occur if you have learned this doctrine or this dogma that you can't have emotions. So you feel emotions, like, you know, okay, this is there, but I can't have it, so I have to fight it. and I have to resist it, and that just creates more of it, and it just leads to this downward spiral and into all those conditions. Your chronic stressed out, you're gonna get symptoms of depression and all those things you don't want to have if you want to if you want to have a powerful life, and also if you want to if you want to be a leader, be an entrepreneur, be a strong and healthy man. I think this story that you can't have your emotions, it just creates the opposite of what you might think that you have is the real intention behind it. Because I think the intention behind it is, okay, you are perceived as strong and you are strong. And again, like, I'm not telling you to, like, if you're getting emotional in like a business meeting and you start having a breakdown and you start crying, that might not be the best response in that moment or the most resourceful response in this moment. But on the flip side, it's also important to acknowledge that you have those emotions and to learn how to deal with them. Because if you stuff, like, you can stuff it down for temporarily, but at some point it will show up. And when it shows up, it's usually a lot nastier. And I like what Jordan Peterson has to say on that, that it's that you need to deal with the monster as long as it's a baby and not let it develop into this dragon that is gonna burn
you. I've never heard that from him. I've not really followed much of his work, but I've heard similar things. Like, my dad died about 4 years ago, and when that happened, a really good friend of mine who's done a lot of work in counseling and social work, we were speaking, and she said to me, listen, grief is the kind of emotion that if you ignore it, it comes back and kicks your ass 10 times worse later on. Exactly what you just said. The baby turns into a full developed monster and it comes back much, much worse. So her advice to me, which I've taken on for as many of those things as I can, as many of my emotions as I can, is that when they show up, but particularly the hard ones like grief or sadness, when it shows up, allow yourself to feel it. And what's really fascinating is when we surrender to those feelings, and naturally, I agree with what you said, to the point that if you're in a business meeting and you need to operate in a particular way, you may need to excuse yourself and say, okay, I need to go process this. But the surrendering to our emotions, they pass and they move through us so much more quickly compared to when we resist it. It's almost like if you imagine, have an image in my head, like if we're, you know, holding a rope and we clutch onto it and stop it from moving, then it sort of burns our hands and it stays there. But then if we just open our hand and let it flow through, it moves really quickly, and, you know, then it's gone and it's done, it's processed, you know.
Yeah. And this, I think it's good to have over time to develop a little bit of a strategy book on things you can do to handle emotions. Like, once you've accepted, okay, I have those things, this is part of me, I have to learn how to do it. The second part, okay, now I know how things show up. Like, then it's really about having those strategies. And I think this is going to look different for a lot of people. Like I said, for me personally, lifting weights, getting moving, for me is something that works wonders. Another big one for me is writing. I'm a very, very big fan of journaling, because when I, it doesn't really matter what I feel. For me, writing just helps me to get thoughts on paper, right? And I think if you're an analytical person, learning to organize your thoughts is also a big part of learning to organize your emotions. So, because those things, they are connected.
I've heard it said that journaling, when we actually use a pen and paper, like physically handwriting things, it actually taps into our emotions far more easily than if we were to try and type things out on a computer or a phone. So I always recommend to my clients that write longhand, write with a pen or a pencil on paper, because of how easily our brain can then translate our emotions into words on a page and how powerful that is as a processing tool. Yeah, I just had to sort of drop that in there because I completely agree. I think it's so powerful. I wanted to just tap on something really quickly as well, which is that as I've been reflecting on this through the conversation, the step one of like acceptance, it's really fascinating too how much that acceptance is actually related to acceptance of our whole self.
Yeah.
And how that is often an underlying reason why we are reaching outwards all the time for, you know, I need to have bigger biceps, or I need to have more money, or I need to have the achievement in my job, or whatever it is, like that, almost like the external validation that often we associate with those things. If we're, you know, the alpha male or the typical stereotype of like the superstar guy or the entrepreneur, like whatever it is, but all of those things, in my experience personally, have come from a lack of accepting who I am and a lack of loving and caring for who I am exactly as I am, you know. And it just, yeah, it sort of occurred to me, I wanted to make sure I raised it before we got to the end of the interview, because I think it's an important distinction, you know. And it resonated when you were talking about how you started lifting weights and it had that shadow side, it had that element of you were doing it to be something else and to reach outward outside of yourself for appearance or for positive judgment from others or acceptance or whatever externally. But then there was still that piece inside that was hollow or was empty or was, you know, unfulfilled. And so accepting our emotions is like a really great step on the path to accepting all of us as we are. And then from that place, we can be far more resourceful and we can be far more empowered to show up as all of ourselves in the way we need to in our lives to feel fulfilled and to feel satisfied.
Yeah, I fully agree. And something I tell my clients when you work on your physique and you work on getting strong and all those kind of things, even when it comes to making more money, I think it's great to do all those things. The only thing I would be careful is like, what's the intention behind this goal? You know, am I doing this because it's something I want to create? Like, that's really awesome. You know, if you want to, like, for me personally, I think it's like I wanted to be able to lift those amounts of weight. So it was a great goal to get started. The only thing that is dangerous is when you start to compensate with parts of yourself that you consider inferior. And
yes,
a lot, like something I see all the time is people being like, okay, I need to get there because otherwise I can't accept myself. Like, I need to lose the weight, otherwise I can't accept myself. And what, like,
I'll be happy when
once I lose this weight and I get in shape, I can accept myself. But the reality is that self-acceptance usually comes before you can actually reach that goal. And this is something that is very counterintuitive if you have never thought about or dealt with those kind of topics, because you might think that, okay, if I accept this situation, I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm not going to do anything about it. And I don't see this to be the case at all. The way I see it is, if you really accept yourself, then you are able to, that's the prerequisite of being able to develop this discipline, which for me personally is all about self-worth and having worthy goals that you can follow. Yeah. It's really about your values. Once you get that, when you accept yourself, you are able to really demand more for yourself. And demand might be the wrong word here, but you really desire more for yourself. You desire a better life for yourself.
Yes.
Because unless you accept yourself, which usually lack of self-acceptance usually shows up as shame, until you deal with that, you will just produce more of that, and you reproduce more of that by not taking action on your goal. And that's a part most people miss. And this is why I think it's so important to talk about stress management, about talk about emotional management, also in the context of just getting in shape, being in, being healthy, because emotions are there, not just in your head. They affect your body, they affect everything in your life. And that's why I think that really is like, again, you just can't avoid it.
Yeah. I mean, your comment before about when you say to yourself in the morning, I don't feel like working out this morning. I don't feel like working out today. Like, that's a classic example of where that is a thought loop, but that thought can create feelings of resistance and struggle and difficulty. And sometimes that thought comes from feelings of unworthiness. I don't feel like working out because what's the point? I'm not worth anything anyway, you know? So it's very interlinked. And I personally had this experience. I was around the time, I think it was just after my son had been born, before I'd actually been diagnosed with depression, I'd just been training like a demon. I'd run a full marathon distance race in Australia and was then training for like an Ironman triathlon, which was insane. But anyway, so part of that process was I was going to the gym with a personal trainer at least twice a week. And then I was doing training runs and swims and bike rides and all that sort of stuff. And I was doing all of those things and at the same time eating so much crap food. So I was really sabotaging all of my fitness efforts, because the fitness activities and the training became a form of self-punishment. And then to feel better about myself or to soothe myself, I would start emotionally eating. So I'd be like drinking sodas and eating chocolate and junk food and burgers and fries and all the stuff that's not helping me feel balanced, that's not helping my body recover well from hard training sessions. So it was this horrible vicious cycle, you know? So I can completely relate when there's those underlying problems there that you haven't dealt with or you haven't faced. It does really start to cause issues with how you show up for the things that you say are valuable or important in your life, you know? And I mean, the underlying question from today's episode of why is this so important? Well, processing and dealing with our emotions is like such an essential part of being a great human that we need to do that to show up as our best. If we want to be fit and healthy and kind and able to lead effectively and be creative and be innovative and all of these things that, you know, people that are performance minded and oriented and striving for better, the only way to get there is to have a very integrated self, to be able to integrate all of the parts of who we are, because otherwise it's like trying to run a race with one of your legs weighed down, you know, with a really, really heavy shoe. It's always going to be off balance and never fully there.
Yeah. And this process of integration, I think that's like the last step. And my approach is, this is something I also have in one of my programs, is to really, my approach is to stop seeing emotions as those bad things, as those things you need to try to kill off, but it's really about learning from them, about learning to really learn the lesson, you know, learn from your emotions.
Like signposts. They're literally like little signposts saying you need to pay attention to this.
Yeah, you know? Like exactly. Stop seeing them as like your enemy and start seeing them as your teacher, because emotions, yes, they can really teach you a lot of things. Like when you run Facebook ads as an entrepreneur and you get some nasty comments and you get like all angry, like what causes you to get angry, you know, like what does this person trigger inside you to cause this reaction? And when you're able to work through that, again, it just amplifies so much for you in your life, not just your happiness, but also your performance as an entrepreneur. Because if you, again, if you can't deal with that, if you aren't grounded, if you're not integrated well enough, you probably stop running your ads. Or if you're trying to lose weight and you used to use emotions, not emotions, but food as a way to deal with your emotions, which is just so, it's just so common. It's just such a big topic. You won't get in shape sustainably, because even if you get, even if you get the body desire, like, again, I see this so much. People just at some point, well, the emotions, they don't go away. They don't learn how to handle it. And then at some point you just go back to that cycle of sabotaging yourself. And again, the only way, that's like the underlying thing of this episode, the only way you will ever deal with that is to just learn to integrate it, accept that you have emotions. And as you said, like, it's rep after rep after rep. You won't
the only way out is through, right? The only way to deal with your emotions is to deal with your emotions.
Exactly. The only way out is through. And like, if you are reactive at the beginning, this is gonna show up at some point. You know, it happens to me that I sometimes get reactive even after all those years of working on myself and all those years of personal development. It's really just about getting better, getting more resourceful with it, and just learning the lesson, integrating it step by step. And I think also to some degree, really, again, acknowledging that it's gonna involve discomfort, because for me, like, if you're anxious or if you experience fear, like, it's not gonna feel different, you know, even if you're more advanced on this journey and you learn, okay, this is just that, it's gonna feel you're gonna feel the same discomfort. The only thing that changes is, like, your ability to handle it. And I think that really is the ultimate goal on that.
Yeah, I mean, fear never goes away, right? Fear is always present, because there's always a part of us that goes, oh, is this safe? Can I do this safely and not be exposed and not be at risk or something, you know? And look, I still experience moments of fear or discomfort about showing up vulnerably online or in coaching sessions or what have you, you know. And you're right, it's just a matter of increasing our ability to tolerate that and still move forward and not being taken out of play all the time by our emotions. Not, I mean, the opposite, I suppose, too, of the opposite of, like, not really having any ability to connect in with the second floor is of our four-story mansion, the emotional level. The opposite of that is spending all of our time there, where we're, like, on this constant emotional roller coaster, you know. And there are people that we obviously would all see in our lives who, you know, follow mainstream media and TV programs and what have you, and they're constantly bouncing around between sadness and fear and outrage and anger and disgust and all of that, depending on what news article they've just read or seen on television. And there's a problem there too, because it means that when we're completely stuck in our emotions, we never have the ability to step out of them and observe and reflect and learn from them. We're just constantly on this wild ride. And it means that we're completely open to being manipulated constantly into those emotions and to make all of our actions and choices from those places. So, yeah, I think it's a really, really important topic, Manuel. I'm so stoked with where it's gone today. It's been great.
Yeah, I agree. It's been an amazing episode. And I think it's a great spot to call it a day for today. So thank you so much for being my guest today and sharing your story. Again, if you got any final thoughts on that topic.
Look, I think for me, the way forward in my mind, is for all men to learn to be powerfully connected to their own emotions. And, you know, what's that saying? The hardest journey is the 12 or 18 inches from our heads to our hearts. When we can really get connected with our hearts, with our feelings as men, then we just have such a broader palette of color to work with in the world. We have such a better ability to connect and be empathetic with other people. We can have a much richer, much more full experience of life ourselves, and we can show up so much more effectively and so much more beautifully for the people we care about and for the things that we're passionate about. So to me, it's a no-brainer. But I mean, I live this, I breathe this air and drink this water all the time. So, you know, it's obvious that I'll say that this is the only way forward. But in everything I've read, everything I've learned and studied along this path, there's no downside to it. The only things that come from getting better at handling and understanding our emotions as men are all positive. So that's where I would leave it as well, Manuel. Thank you so much. And I'll also add, if anyone wants to get in touch with me to learn more about how I work, it's just israelsmith.com. There's plenty of stuff on there. I have a podcast. I have some articles. You know, people can book in and have a complimentary consultation with me to learn about how I coach and talk about what's happening and whether we're a good fit, you know, all of the sort of stuff that you would expect. So I'm sure you'll probably have a link somewhere for your listeners. Yes. But
yes, of course, we're going to link everything in the description of the podcast. And just to add, this, of course, also applies to women as well. We've been primarily talking about men and their emotions because men tend to have a much more difficult time connecting. And yeah, again, if you want to learn more about Israel's work, we will link everything in the description of the podcast. And if you want to learn how to get in shape sustainably without depriving diets, I, of course, also link my contact details in the description. So that's it for this episode. Again, take the leap and see you on the next one. Bye-bye.